All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's May 27th, 2026. And we got a couple of things going on this morning. First and foremost, we've got oil is down big again this morning. As of the making of this video, down about $5 a barrel on the latest news in the Middle East opium trade. Iranian State TV released their latest draft version of the MOU, which says pretty much exactly the same thing the Iranians have been saying for a month now. And yet, for some reason, stocks rally and oil falls on this news. No response from the U.S. yet as of the making of this video. But if I had to go out on a limb, I'd say the U.S. is going to come out and say, we're still very far apart on this. We didn't agree to this. No. And then we can repeat this whole silly exercise again tomorrow. That being said, the other news that is going on here is memory stocks have joined the Trillion Club. In particular, Micron and SK Hynix, both of those companies have just been on an absolute monster run for really 2 years, but it really hit its stride in the last couple of months here. Both those stocks were up big yesterday on what? I don't know. Middle East opium trade, memory prices, AI data center buildouts. But yeah, those companies both up several 100% year to date, now in the Trillion Club. And I'm just sitting here remembering, I think it was 2018 or maybe early 2019, when Apple became the first company to be worth $1 trillion. And now we've got like more than a dozen companies worth $1 trillion. The combination of big businesses just absolutely destroying their small business counterparts, combined with the falling value of the dollar. And now $1 trillion doesn't really mean what it used to, does it? As this is all going on, the South Korean KOSPI index hit another all-time high yesterday, a big gap up, although it did put in kind of an ugly candle yesterday. We've also got Taiwan chips. Chip stocks are ripping. NVIDIA says they're going to spend $150 billion in Taiwan, setting up a new campus. They're going to increase their spend at Taiwan Semiconductor. And, of course, the Taiwan index also put in a new all-time high yesterday. Now, NVIDIA's sudden big spending plans in Taiwan may have something to do with the fact that the Taiwanese are finally starting to do something about smuggling of their chips into China, which I'm sure NVIDIA would love it if the Taiwanese government were to just pretend that wasn't going on. But we got more details in the latest super micro smuggling bust today. Taiwan now says that the NVIDIA chips were being smuggled via Japan into China through intermediaries in Hong Kong. So now we're smuggling chips to China through Japan, not to be confused with that other story where they're smuggling chips to Alibaba in China through Thailand, not to be confused with that other story where they're smuggling NVIDIA chips to China through Singapore, not to be confused with that other story in the US where they're smuggling NVIDIA chips into China through domestic companies. But again, these companies have robust compliance standards, and they insist that all their customers follow the law. And, you know, yeah, we have very rigorous KYC and all that stuff the company spokesperson says every time these guys get caught illegally selling their chips to China. Meanwhile, SpaceX has just won a $2 billion contract to build a constellation of small communication satellites for the Space Force. Basically, it sounds a lot like Starlink for the military, a bunch of low Earth orbit satellites, hundreds, possibly even thousands of them. So SpaceX with a $2 billion contract, it didn't list a time frame. I don't know if all $2 billion is going to be this year or next year, probably spread out over a few years. But it is a big chunk of the Space Force's annual procurement budget is all going to SpaceX. Got to pump that IPO, baby. Meanwhile, we've got China is partially lifting export restrictions on fertilizer, in particular urea. Some relief for farmers there, emphasis on some, in particular farmers in India. China had basically blocked any exports of fertilizer after the war in Iran started. That's causing problems for farmers all over the world. They have lifted this. They started rolling out their quotas. They just weren't releasing their quotas, which is a de facto export ban. So they started rolling out their quotas, and, well, it's encouraging, but it's only about a third of what they were doing last year. So, you know, take that news with a grain of salt. We've also got more details from the BP board chairman who was abruptly fired yesterday. We got some more news about that. He is pushing back on his abrupt termination. We got a couple of warnings from the European Central Bank this morning as well. First, their warning of a sudden sharp repricing in markets. Gee, you think? The European Union talking about how asset prices are making all-time highs despite the real economy not doing so well. Gee, you think? It's almost like the European Central Bank has been watching my show. How about that? Now, the ECB is also out here warning about private credit. Now, they're definitely watching my show. I'm taking full credit for this. The European Central Bank is saying private credit losses will hit insurers and pension funds much harder than they will the banks. And I think that's supposed to make us feel better, but it's not working. And last but not least, we've got Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs Private Credit Corp says they will repurchase 18.6 million shares tendered by investors. Okay, what does that mean? Why do you care? Well, that means that we are in for another slew of headlines day after day, probably starting over the next few weeks, of private credit restricting withdrawals once again. That's what that headline means. We're going to talk about that one. Stick around to the end of the show for more on private credit. But first, we got to shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. And don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm if you're new here, so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single business day. Right now, the S&P 500 is up 19 points, or about a quarter of 1%. And remember when I said, you know, as of the making of this video and the monologue, and I was like, stocks are up and oil was down $5, as of the making, because I'm pretty sure the U.S. is going to come out and refute this Iranian state TV report about the draft MOU of hopefully, maybe cautiously, optimistically ending the war sometime. But this is when that Iranian state TV announcement was made. Stocks rallied. Why? Because hopium, and already we're starting to give up those. The Dow Jones is higher by 72 points or 0.14%. Again, you can see a little bit of the hopium rally there on that Iranian state TV announcement. Now we're giving back some of that. And the NASDAQ is up 193 points, 0.2% higher. Same shape there. Big rally on the Iran news, and now we're giving it back. For all we know, the U.S. has already refuted the story. I hit the record button a few minutes ago. Looking over at the dollar weakened sharply on that Iranian state TV announcement, currently at 99.03, down by 12 basis points. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are lower almost across the board this morning. The 30-year Treasury, 5.003, down 2 points and change. The 10-year yield is at 4.470, extending its losses of the last few days by 2 points and change. And again, when I say extending losses, interest rates falling means bond prices going up. So yes, the yield is falling, but bonds are rallying here. The 2-year yield, 4.031, that's lower by almost 2 basis points. And the 1 month is unchanged at 3.670%. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are about $240 lower this morning, $75,586. Bitcoin did drop quite a bit yesterday, below its 50-day moving average again, although still kind of in that range we've been in for a couple of weeks here. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are largely lower again this morning. Spot gold, $4,445. That's lower by $62. Or 1.38% in the red this morning. Spot silver is also down at $74.63 an ounce. That's lower by $2.33, or about 3% lower, but I still like this shiny. Copper's off by 0.33%. Platinum lower by 1.25%. Palladium is the one metal that's higher, 0.1% in the green this morning. And crude oil sharply lower, down $5 here, $88.82. Look at the oil chart here. We're now down a couple days in a row, starting mid last week on all this optimistic news of a deal that we still don't have. We've got drafts in Iranian state media that say the same thing the Iranians have been saying for months, that the U.S. has refuted several times already, but they're saying it again. And so oil's down $5. I guess that's how this works. But this dip, it does appear to be for real, because we are now comfortably below the 50-day moving average. I don't know how comfortable it is, but We have failed to stay below that level several times here. So oil looking pretty weak. Again, this is all hot air and hopium until we have a deal and until boats are actually transiting the strait without being blown up. There's nothing. All right, let's talk about what's going on in South Korea here. Memory chip frenzy sends SK Hynix and Micron into the $1 trillion club. You know, these were boring names. Like, memory was a heavily commoditized, oh, there's no margins, there's no moat, anything. This is the kind of stuff that we were saying about memory stocks up to like 6 months ago. And now all of a sudden they're in the $1 trillion club because this AI bubble is just getting obscene. The breakneck surge in memory chip stocks is intensifying, sending the market caps of SK Hynix and Micron above $1 trillion for the first time, as investors bet the AI boom will lead to a sustained revaluation of the industry. SK Hynix rose 9.3% in South Korea on Wednesday, taking its 12-month gain to more than 1,000% and becoming the third Asian company to join the $1 trillion club after rival chip maker Samsung earlier this month. Micron soared 19% on Tuesday, the most since 2011, after a UBS Group analyst said the stock may double over the next year. The three leading makers of high bandwidth memory now sit at the choke point of the global AI buildout, with their products forming a critical bottleneck for data center expansion. Investors and analysts expect memory shortages to last through 2027, giving them unusual pricing power over the world's largest tech companies. This is data centers getting more expensive, folks, when you watch these memory chip stocks rally. And look, Micron was up 19.3% yesterday. It's up another 7% this morning. $960 a share pre-market for Micron Technology. The stock's up 213% year to date. And then look at that five-year chart. Okay, yeah, that's a nice sustainable move you got in memory stocks. Guys, a year and a half ago, this thing was a $65 stock, up almost 1,000% in the last 5 years. And the South Korean index. Now, this is kind of interesting. These are daily candles for the KOSPI index. Look, a big gap up yesterday. Let's zoom in here. You know, the stocks ended up closing the day up 2.25%, but that is actually a pretty ugly candle there, that inverted hammer or shooting star, whatever you want to call that thing. Not so good looking, but, you know, zoom out on the chart. Look at South Korean stocks. Looks just like that Micron chart, just like the SK Hynix start. And guys, this is the index. The index is doing this, not just a single stock or not a meme stock, but the freaking index. And it's happening in Taiwan too. Taiwan chip stocks climb after NVIDIA announces $150 billion spending plans. NVIDIA is expanding heavily in Taiwan with a new campus and a tenfold increase in annual spending, CEO Jensen Huang announced Wednesday, as the chipmaker plans for artificial intelligence-powered growth. Taiwan's TAIEX stock index climbed 1.7% to a record close on Wednesday. Also helping gains was news that South Korea's SK Hynix and U.S.-based Micron became the latest chip-related companies to reach $1 trillion in market value. Now we're spending $100 billion. That's going to $150 billion in Taiwan each year, Huang said in Taipei, noting that's up from $10 to $15 billion annually just 4 or 5 years ago. By the end of the year, NVIDIA will be building a new office complex called Constellation, which can accommodate 4,000 employees in northern Taipei when it opens in 2030, he said. That would be four times the company's existing headcount in Taiwan. Why do you think? Why is NVIDIA suddenly so willing to make this big deal out of all the money they're spending in Taiwan? You think just maybe it's got something to do with this story about Taiwan finally cracking down on chip smuggling? You think maybe suddenly NVIDIA is willing to invest all this money? Taiwan said to suspect NVIDIA chips smuggled to China via Japan. This one in Bloomberg, published late last night. Taiwan prosecutors suspect that three individuals successfully smuggled at least one shipment of NVIDIA AI chips to China after first exporting them to Japan, people familiar with the matter said. The trio was detained last week by Taiwan's Keelung District Prosecutor's Office for allegedly falsifying documents related to exports of supermicrocomputer servers containing advanced NVIDIA chips, which the U.S. has barred from sale to China without a license from Washington. The move marked the island democracy's first public crackdown on AI chip diversion after years of pressure from the U.S. to take a more active role in curtailing China's tech access. All right, so the first move to crack down on chip diversion, and then magically Jensen's like, we'll spend $150 billion, just please don't break up our smuggling rings. When Taiwan's authorities apprehended the three defendants, who've now been officially detained, they also seized about 50 servers, which they accused the trio of preparing fraudulent export documents. But at least one shipment had already gone through Taiwan customs, according to people familiar with the matter. The earlier shipment went to Japan before eventually making it to Hong Kong, a known waypoint for hardware that's ultimately shipped to mainland China, the people said. The people declined to specify the amount of hardware that Taiwan authorities believe was successfully smuggled. The defendants also allegedly planned to use Japan as an intermediary location for the batch of servers that Taiwan officials seized last week, according to the people. The probe may be the first known instance of prosecutors targeting an AI chip smuggling route through Japan, a close ally of the U.S. and a cornerstone of American defense strategy in the Asia Pacific. Other cases have focused on diversion via Southeast Asia, including the biggest such indictment in the U.S. That's the case where the Alibaba servers were being shipped through Thailand. There was also a high-profile case in Singapore last year. But many in Washington have long been convinced that Chinese firms have also managed to procure smuggled hardware within their country. After years of relative quiet on the chip export control enforcement front, American prosecutors are now pursuing at least five criminal cases related to semiconductor diversion. That's on top of chip export fraud cases in Taiwan and Singapore, which don't have their own semiconductor export controls and instead rely on local laws to address the issue. Once again, I would like to send a special one-finger salute to all the people who gave me shit over the last few years saying that there was no proof of NVIDIA chips being sold to China. Yep, no proof, other than all the proof that's been sitting on your face for years. There's no proof. But Taiwan stocks looking very similar to the stocks on the Korean KOSPI exchange. They made a new all-time high yesterday on that NVIDIA spending plan, but they ended up closing red on the day. But still, Taiwanese stocks riding this AI bubble, seemingly to kingdom come. Meanwhile, SpaceX just won a $2 billion contract to make satellites for the Space Force. Note, this is not data centers in space. These are communication satellites. It's not, Space Force isn't building a data center. The U.S. Space Force on Tuesday awarded SpaceX a new pricey satellite contract, further tying the company to its biggest customer. The rocket and satellite company won a $2.29 billion fixed-price deal to contribute to what the Space Force called its Space Data Network Backbone Program. That's a proliferated low-Earth orbit constellation made up of likely hundreds or even thousands of satellites designed to provide high-speed communications for the Pentagon. SpaceX is required to provide the Space Force with a fully operational prototype by the end of next year. Its contract amounts to roughly 18% of the Space Systems Command's $15.6 billion space acquisition budget. The SDN backbone supports the broader SDN, which acts as a core communications layer for the U.S. Space Force warfighting systems, ensuring our sensors and shooters are connected continuously, globally, and securely, said Space Force Colonel Ryan Frazier, who's also an active acquisition executive for the military branch. The award came just hours after the Pentagon called SpaceX a strong and valued partner. The statement was in response to Reuters reporting that SpaceX had been at odds with the Defense Department officials over the Pentagon, what the Pentagon was paying to use its satellite internet technology. So there was this headline about the DOD or the Department of War was upset over SpaceX raising their prices for Starlink. Now, all of a sudden, we've got this $2 billion contract here, which is basically Starlink for the Space Force, a constellation of low Earth orbit satellites for communications. All right. So SpaceX bumping up that revenue there. Meanwhile, China allows fresh urea exports amid Iran-fueled fertilizer crisis, sources say. China has issued export quotas for urea fertilizer, sources with direct knowledge of the matter said, a move that could help ease soaring global prices for one of the world's most widely used crop nutrients after supply disruptions linked to the Iran war. One of the world's largest fertilizer exporters, China, banned exports of many cargoes in March to protect domestic farmers from the surge in prices triggered by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz through which a large share of global fertilizers and their inputs normally flow. Urea exports are managed by a quota system, and the issuance of quotas is a signal authorities are confident that there's enough supply domestically to release some for export. Two Chinese urea producers confirmed to Reuters that they had received export quotas, but declined to provide further details. An Indian importer also said the Chinese government had issued a notification permitting urea exports, though no specifics were disclosed. Several fertilizer industry sources and social media accounts said that around 1.5 million metric tons of urea will be allocated, although Reuters couldn't independently verify that total. China exported 4.9 million tons of urea in 2025, below its historical range of 5 to 5.5 million tons, which usually accounts for around 10% of global urea exports, according to StoneX, a consultancy group. So, yeah, China is lifting a little bit of the pressure off of the fertilizer exports, but still allowing less than a third of what they would normally export to reach foreign shores. So, look, it's a little bit of relief, but still a long way to go here. Meanwhile, we got more details, a few anyway, about BP's ousted chair who says he was fired without explanation. There's the guy right there. Former BP chairman Albert Manifold says he was fired without warning or explanation and will challenge the company's version of events, deepening the turmoil around the UK oil major's latest leadership change. BP ousted Manifold on Tuesday after 8 months on the job, citing serious concerns related to governance standards, oversight, and conduct. The company didn't provide further details in its statement, but people close to BP, who requested anonymity, of course, said there'd been complaints about aggressive behavior by Manifold towards employees, as well as mishandling sensitive information and seeking to bypass the board. All right, so that's the detail we have. Aggressive behavior toward employees. Again, that could mean a lot of different things depending on the context. Mishandling of sensitive information can also mean a lot of different things and seeking to bypass the board. So this guy, Manifold, says, I was removed without warning, without explanation. He said in an email statement, I dispute entirely the characterization of my conduct, and I will not allow a false narrative to go unchallenged. Kind of sounds like he intends to sue. Manifold's dismissal is the latest in a prolonged period of leadership upheaval at BP, which has included three chief executive officers in as many years and raises fresh questions about the company's internal processes at a time when it's seeking to turn around years of poor performance. Manifold was seen as accelerating BP's strategic reboot as the company had been under pressure. So a lot going on here. Still very few details available. I think we're probably going to hear more about this. Nothing at least outright illegal yet, but I think we'll hear more about this in the weeks ahead. Meanwhile, we got a couple of warnings from the European Central Bank this morning. First, they see a danger of a sudden sharp repricing in markets. Well, that almost sounds like they're warning about a market crash, doesn't it? Is it a sudden sharp repricing? Isn't that a kindly worded way of saying crash? Financial markets are in danger of a sudden and significant correction, with investors downplaying threats from factors including the Iran war, the European Central Bank has warned. Despite some recent adjustments, asset prices still look stretched by historical standards, the ECB said Wednesday in its biannual financial stability review, listing downside risks over geopolitical, fiscal, and macro financial developments that appear to be being underestimated. This leaves markets vulnerable to sharp repricing, said Vice President Luis de Guindos, who will retire this month after 8 years overseeing financial stability in the 21-nation euro area. Non-bank financial institutions could amplify financial market swings if they were to occur. All right, those NDFIs, non-depository or non-bank financial institutions, we're talking about like private credit lenders, hedge funds, insurance companies here, could amplify financial market swings. The comments are the latest cautionary note from the ECB that overly bullish investors may be creating a disconnect between financial markets and the real economy. You think maybe there's a disconnect between financial markets and the real economy? Just maybe. Global equities extended their record rally on Wednesday, propelled by momentum in technology shares, whose lofty valuations are facing ever closer scrutiny. All right, but that's not the only warning we're getting from the ECB about sudden sharp price corrections. They're also saying private credit losses may hit insurers more than banks. European insurers and pension funds would likely be hit harder than banks by fallout from losses in the private credit industry, the European Central Bank said, after simulating a severe shock to the market. The illustrative exercise included three stages: direct private credit losses, further hits from loans to software firms in correlated leveraged debt markets, and broader second-round market revaluations, the ECB said in an extract from its Financial Stability Review published on Tuesday. So pretty much exactly what happened in the last quarter. Insurers faced the biggest impact in absolute terms because of their larger, less senior exposure to private credit and equity holdings in the broader market revaluation, the ECB said. We've been talking about how private equity firms have been buying insurance companies and then loading up their balance sheets with their own dog shit assets. So I'm not surprised that insurers face the biggest risk here. But it's also noteworthy that pension funds were also the most heavily affected by aggregate losses from all three stages in terms of total assets, the ECB said. If only somebody had been warning that pension funds were being used as a dumping ground for Wall Street's toxic assets over these last few years. If only somebody had warned us. Banks' losses were contained, not exceeding 1.3% of total equity, thanks to seniority of their loans to private credit funds and relatively small size of the positions, the ECB said. I think that's meant to make us feel better. While banks have a high exposure to leveraged loans, losses from associated exposure to the software sector or from broader market revaluations remain small in aggregate. So no real risks, at least not directly to banks. It's the insurers and the pension funds you got to worry about. And last but not least, we got one more private credit story today. Goldman Sachs Private Credit Corp says as of close of business on March 31st, the fund will repurchase up to 18.6 million shares tendered by holders of the fund's shares. This sounds like a bullish headline at first. You're like, oh, they're doing share buybacks. Great. No, that's not what's going on here. Because Goldman Sachs Private Credit Corp shares subject to the offer represent approximately 5% of the fund's shares outstanding as of March 31st, 2026. So what's really going on here? This is another private credit fund that is gating redemptions at that 5% threshold, as most of them did last quarter. It's now been about 3 months since that trickle of headlines that we got in February, March, about how fund after fund was limiting redemptions, surges in requests, some of them permanently suspending redemptions. And it looks like that is getting set to start again. We had a story about Blackstone's private credit fund having liquidity stress yesterday. Now we've got Goldman Sachs effectively limiting at 5%. They're not saying it here, right? This article isn't telling you that they're gating redemptions, but they're saying that we will repurchase up to 18.6 million shares, which is 5% of the fund's shares outstanding, which means requests were likely higher than that. How much higher, we don't know. I guess we get that story tomorrow. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.